This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
I live right in the middle of the woods. This big thing was 75 feet away from me, smells awful, devoured a whole deer carcass, and then took off and, like, screamed, screeched, and took off across the street. And I know you guys are going to think I'm crazy, but I'm dead serious. There was something very big, bigger, a lot bigger than me, out here. How long ago did this happen? Immediately. I don't know if animal control, I mean, it is a very large, hairy animal of some kind.
Now, was it standing on two or four?
Well, if I told you it was standing on two legs, you're going to think I'm crazy, but I'm serious. It ran off at breaking limbs and trees, and it kind of screeched, howled. A very creepy, scary thing is, like I said, I live in a tent. We're in the woods, and I just saw this freaky, scary, very large creature devour a deer and run off across the road.
Okay.
I don't know.
Is there any way that we can have an officer contact you?
Yeah, I guess it's this number.
Okay, and do you see signs of a dead deer, blood, whatever?
I'm not going to go check it out right at the moment. Is that okay? Like I said, I thought somebody should know there's a very large something big enough to eat a deer and as a
predator.
Are you
seeing someone there?
Yes, ma'am.
Did they see it too?
Yes, ma'am.
I've lived in the woods for years. I swear to God, I've never seen nothing like this. This is bigger than me.
And it,
I'm 6 feet. It's bigger than me.
It's very large. He carried the carcass off. I mean,
oh, he carried
like,
it
with
okay.
Nothing. Like just.
But I know it picked up that deer and walked with 2 feet.
It's a very large something that smells bad and is bigger than we are. My husband's a very large. Nothing's ever scared him, and we both saw it, so.
Okay, all right, we'll have an officer patrol that area.
Strange Harbor, be strange.
And a very exciting edition of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird.
The strange, the unsuccessful, and the unsupported.
Well, the very unsupported and unsuccessful Johnny and Billy here, and we talk about UFOs, Sasquatch, well, any cryptozoology, alien abduction, ghosts, near-death experience, afterlife. I guess afterlife and ghost would be the same thing, wouldn't it?
Kind of.
Right?
I think there's a little bit of difference there. You know, the ghost is an apparition here on this planet, and the spirit is something that lives wherever it wants to live. So.
Also, conspiracy theories. What other things? Did we cover
witches,
everything?
Witches, warlocks, goblins, right. Ghouls.
Okay.
Yeah.
And historian Stephen Arms.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I appear once a month on the last Friday at 8 o'clock here on KBKW on Coffee Talk every month, and I do pieces over with Doug over there. We talk about the day and history, politics, whatever is coming through. I'm a former professor of history. I'm one of these people that came here from California. Boo hiss, boo hiss. And my wife and I have been here for, you know, what, 16 years now. Bought a house up in Aberdeen and have been happy up here, and I've been trying to get more involved in lecturing and teaching in this area now that I'm pretty much semi-retired.
Have you seen a UFO or a Sasquatch ever?
No, but technically, yes, I've seen unidentified flying objects. I've seen things in the sky that I didn't know what it was.
Right.
But if you're telling me that I seen an Altarian mothership, no, I haven't seen it. I have not seen an Altarian mothership.
Wow, so you're versed in things like that.
Yeah.
I am a long-time sci-fi reader and fan, going back to, you know, Bradbury and Larry Niven and Asimov and people like that on. So, I mean, and I have a more than a passing interest in the metaphysical. I've always it's an aspect of history, too.
Right. Now, can you tell us any history, give us any history of, like, UFOs or Sasquatch or anything?
Well, I mean, I would tend to think the one thing that leans me to believe that there probably is some form of Sasquatch creature around is just that in the history of Native American peoples and in indigenous peoples in other parts of the world, obviously in the Himalayan area, they have legends and stories. People who are much closely more ha- are much more closely connected to nature than we are, that there were these beings that lived there. That alone would make me think that it would give it some validity in it. Is it possible that you would have it? Also, in research, they found out recently that there is, of course, an ancestor, a parallel evolutionary creature called an Osteopithecus, which was a large anthropoid that would parallel human development, but it was about 8 feet, 8 or 9 feet tall. They found skeletal remains of this in Eurasia.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, when I saw the diagrams of that, when I was watching a special dealing with something on this, I said, well, there's your Yeti and your Sasquatch legends right there.
Yeah.
You might have just simply had a species. And they go, oh, that's impossible. We'd have seen them. I've seen the coelacanth remains at the Smithsonian Institution, which is a fish that was extinct for 250 million years and saw its petrified, you know, preserved body at this. That was caught when, you know, this is like 40 years ago. They recently found a shark species that is an entirely unknown that they'd assumed from its development would have been extinct millions and millions of years ago. So obviously, you know, people call it cryptozoology, but the world is a big place, and there's things that it's not that difficult to believe that these creatures could exist in an environment that we just haven't determined. Some cases, maybe they don't exist anymore, which would be a shame. Maybe we've driven them into extinction by expansions. But I do believe that's a possibility that many of the legendary creatures in the world were legendary until somebody actually discovered them.
Wow.
Wow. What do you say about that?
Well, you did ask my opinion.
Right. Right.
From a historical perspective, there have been, at least what we think, you know, hieroglyphics and petroglyphs and stuff that relate to possible alien beings and even possible giants, such as Bigfoot and other giant creatures that may have roamed the earth long ago. From a historical perspective, where do you think those things come from and where do you think they went to?
Well, again, you obviously could have, if you're dealing with things like an Osteopithecus or breeds of creatures that are now extinct, it would be easy to understand why people would think in those directions. As far as the depiction of aliens, I mean, you see that a lot in Mesoamerican and South American renditions in their art and the like of things that indicate that there's some chariots of the gods, that type of idea. I think one of the more interesting proofs on that was the plane drawings in South America, where you actually have depictions of art that you could only see from 2,000 feet in the air. Now, either someone had a tremendous imagination or someone was actually doing something to see that you could actually be in the air. I think the universe is a big universe, and it is quite possible that there could be the planet could have been visited in the past by other races. You have to assume from other worlds. You'd have to assume that they can get around distance is the big problem with it. The universe is incredibly, massively large. And if you're going anywhere at the speed of light or less, you're going to get there in hundreds or thousands of years to get anywhere. But if you can, once you can transcend, we have a lot of people talk about hyperspace and warp spaces and folded universe theories and all that type of stuff. There's string theories on. Anyway, I don't want to get into it. I could get myself lost there for a second. Once you can transcend distance, then it's entirely possible that if you had races from other worlds, they could easily come here. And if you're ever going to have any being, if there is life in the universe out there that's developed life, that has learned to found some way to get around the distance, then visiting here would be fairly effortless. The question I would wonder is why? Why would you want to visit Earth? I mean, I assume we're a low rent district and they just feel sorry for us or something.
Right.
In the Milky Way galaxy, where we live, obviously, our sun is a type G star, a yellow sun, and there are approximately 3 or 4 billion of them in this galaxy. If you assume that a type G star, just for the sake of assumption, let's say a type G star like we have is the one more likely to generate life, then that's 3 or 4 billion worlds that could have developed life,
right,
as we would understand it to be. There are other factors, I mean, you know, planet distances and all kinds of stuff, and where's your lush area for the worlds to survive within those orbits. I mean, it could all. But this is just one galaxy. I mean, again, if you could transcend distance, I don't think galactic distances would be any issue. I mean, if you can go from here to Alpha Centauri, which is, again, what, 3.5 light years,
Right.
Once you can travel that distance, what's the difference in going 1,000 light years? What's the difference in going 1,000,000 light years? I mean, you're not dealing with the physical world as we're dealing with it now. And so I do think, is it possible? Sure. Just the sheer grandeur and size of the universe tells me there has to be intelligent life out there.
I believe there is. Based on my own experiences.
Like I said, I've never had any personal experiences myself in that way, but I would just play the math on it and say it'd be like it would be. Now, for all we know, there could be, you know, Alpha Centauri could have life on it right now, and we don't know it. It just isn't developed enough to it could be, you know, gophers, you know, or whatever. It could be some small or a creature. Life could be plentiful. It just has to, because it'd have to reach a certain level we'd be able to detect it. And that would mean a technological level that would have to be high enough that we would detect radio waves and other methods like that would indicate that there is actually life out there. And again, the universe is approximately 20 billion years old. Intelligent life could have risen and fall a million times in 20 billion years.
That's right.
Right.
I believe that there are different levels of advancement or different levels of evolution within all the living creatures in the universe. Where are we in the history of the universe? Where are we right now?
Well, our human beings, our system, you know, our sun is about 4 billion years old at this point. And we've had, and humanoid life has only been in existence for about 1,000,000 years, technically, if you want to get into Cro-Magnons, to going to the modern Homo sapiens, we're talking about 50,000 years. So, I mean, when you think about the fact that the, you know, mountains are billions of years old, and we're talking about 100,000 years, I mean, what are we other than hairless apes running around on a planet? But the fact that we can even ask these questions, people would ask in another metaphysical concept, human beings have souls. I think that only a creature that has a soul would ask that question. In dealing with the idea of extraterrestrial life, I would think definitely possible. Now, the fact that the Air Force recently revealed that they actually are spending money on UFO phenomenon that was released recently,
right.
This year actually. I mean, that tells me that there must be something going on, that they're obviously, if they're checking it, because they're obviously not, they're not saying, well, this is, you know, this is, these days the standard blame person, I guess, are the Russians. But it would be the, you know, is it the, you know, it's not, the, they're not saying, well, we're occurred about the Russians, because they thought it was the Russians, they'd say it was the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or the Chinese, or whoever, you know, your particular boogeyman of the day you want to be.
Right.
The fact that they're doing it tells me that they're researching it. And if the government was aware of the fact that there were extraterrestrial beings had visited the Earth and they had actual proof of it, would they keep it from the people of the world? And I go, of course they would, because it's the most significant event in human history.
And politicians are paranoid.
Possibly, but I mean, it literally, you have to think more than just politicians. It affects politicians, I'd agree. It affects governmental structures. It would affect every religion in the world. It would also change physical laws, because we have physical laws, we believe, and our physical laws don't let us transcend distance. Well, if somebody's here, guess what? New set of physical laws.
Right.
I mean, that would be the whole point. I sing the Body Electric, Bradbury's, you know, are there mangers on different world that knew his light and virgins? He comments, is there, the concept of religion would all change. Because if, you know, if the Denebim Fours show up here and go, hey guys, how's it going? You know, are they the children of Allah? Are they children of Yahweh? I mean, you know, where's your religions? I think the Buddhists would have no problem with them, but, you know, the Buddhists are pretty cool about that kind of stuff. But every religion in the world would have to recalibrate its belief system.
Right.
And not to mention, you know, so society, social issues, technological issues, the changes would be tremendous. It would, like, literally, and I'm not over-exaggerating, it'd be the most significant event in the history of this world. You know, the day the Earth stood still, remember the...
Oh, yeah.
Saucer landing in the middle of Central Park. Or that was Washington, that's right.
Have you read the book Saturn Run?
No, I'm not familiar with it.
All right, well, then I won't ask you that question.
Well, then don't ask me that question. I can fake it if you want. But
yeah, it's a really good book if you like sci-fi. And one of the things they talk about are, you know, our ability to travel through space very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And that some of that technology currently exists, the technology in the book that they talk about. And so if we have the technology to travel through space very quickly, like from here to Saturn in, you know, maybe a month and a half,
mm-hmm.
2 months, whatever, versus what does it take to get to Saturn,
Well, I mean, that you get to Saturn that time if you're getting close to light speed. You get up half the speed of light, you could get to Saturn in probably about 2 months.
Yeah.
But I mean, but the problem with that is relativity correct? Because as indicated from Einstein, that as the closer you get to the speed of light, there is a temporal distortion where time actually slows down.
Right.
So you would travel for 2.5 months, but from your perspective, it would be, you know, I mean, the idea, the closer you get to relativistic speeds, you think it's only taking 2.5 months, but it's actually taking 3.5 years because of the relativity. If that's true,
right.
You're never going to get out of the solar system other than on slow boats. I mean, if you go a quarter the speed of light and went to Alpha Centauri, you could get there in 6 years or something.
Sure. But we're only thinking in terms of minutes, hours, days, and Earth time.
But it isn't. But ultimately, it is an Earth time when you kick that when you use atomic clocks and put them at relativistic speeds. There's a distortion within the deterioration. So it is actually the molecular reactions we're talking about. The atomic reactions actually slow. So unless you can get around the physical universe as you understand it, you're probably not going to get out of the solar system. And that's cruel, but it's true. I mean, I want us to get out of the solar system. I'd like a universe, you know, filled with, you know, vast many things that to seek out new life and new civilization and boldly go where no one has gone before. I mean, that's cool.
Or at least no human.
Well,
we don't know who's been there before.
Well, I was going to say it's no man has gone before, but these days you're not supposed to say no man has gone before.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, you can't say man. We can't have manhole covers either.
Yeah,
you got to be gender neutral.
Personhole covers.
Right.
Boy, I could say something that would probably be incredibly politically incorrect, but,
right.
But I will move on at that point.
Where's all this going from today back in the past?
Mm-hmm.
What's happened in history? How we've progressed? What's happened in the past, what's happening in the present, where are we going? What's going on?
I think that depends on how well you can read history. I recently did an article for the Senior Sunset Times, and the last line, I believe, was that history is a roadmap that'll tell you where you've come from, and if you read it properly, it'll tell you where you're going. Again, that would be the point on it, is from a point of view of history, human beings, it's very complicated. Your question has so many, I'm almost getting into, there are too many branches we talk about. Are we talking about from a point of view of civilization, a point of view of technology? Is our technology outstripping our ability to control it? And I think that's the case. It is. Again, you know, I'm a strict constitutionalist. I'm a strong believer in the Constitution of the United States. But you're having to take that and apply it to cloning. I mean, where does human rights begin if you clone? If I make a copy of myself, does it have the same rights as I do? I mean, and if you can you harvest, you know, I mean, cloning's an issue. I mean, that's a modern technological issue that's going to have to be dealt with. How are you going to get around issues of what defines human life entirely and what defines death? I mean, someday we're going to probably be able to copy the engrams and patterns of human minds onto technology. So I can literally put you in a computer file. For those who watch what Winter Soldier, Armin Zola did that in the Marvel movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, are you still alive at that point? Are you still that same person if those engrams are copied, though your physical, portal body is gone? I mean, I'm trying not to be ridiculous on it, but when you talk about the patterns of history, there are huge issues and a lot of it's coming into because of technology. I think human beings fundamentally have not really changed much. I mean, if I can go back and read Plutarch and I can look at modern man and I can see the same problems. You know, human beings still have the same, John and I have talked about the seven, still have the seven deadly sins still.
Mm-hmm.
You know, humans still have greed and they still have lust and they still have envy and all the different things that make us up. We also have nobility and strength and courage and other things that go the direction too. But we're on the edge of a brave new world. I mean, our technology is going faster than our ability to keep up with it. If we don't learn how to control it and keep it and understand it, we're going to defer to Bezos and Google to determine what our world's going to look like.
Technology in and of itself is not either good or evil. It just is.
No.
So it's the way we use it that makes it good or evil.
I'd agree with that.
Are we moving more towards an evil use of technology versus a good use of technology?
Technology ultimately is power, is all it comes down to.
Right.
And power is always a problem. Most people in the world can withstand misfortune, they can withstand even failure, but if you really want to test a person, you give them power. And how they use that power indicates the true measure and the character of that person. So I would definitely think that technology is not evil, and are we? But if it creates power, the problem with power is when you give a person power, they tend to want to play God with it. And are you going to be a benevolent God, or are you going to be a malevolent God? So I would definitely be, I think that is what we should be afraid of. Are human beings, I would think human beings now are less moral than they were in the past. Because there is something to be said for having a healthy fear of punishment for your action. People often say, well, you know, I don't, you know, Islam, Judaism, Christianity, primary religions, there are, your actions have consequences and you're ultimately being judged on it from a religious point of view. And people, you know, atheists will say, well, it's all superstition and all that. And I go, yeah, fine. Well, I'm not an atheist because I don't have the faith to believe in nothing at all. If you don't think an atheist isn't a person of faith, well, that takes some serious faith to be a total atheist, you know. And if it doesn't, and if there is no real morality, then why don't I just shoot the atheist? And what does he care about it? It's totally a moral world anyway, right? So I mean, is there value to it? I think modern people probably, from a historical point of view, have less guidance because of spiritual issues. Now, whether you agree with Christianity or Judaism at all, they do set parameters on what you're supposed to do. And I, like I said, from a Christian point of view, for example, I'm not a Christian. Matter of fact, I can tell you entirely because my wife told me. Mm-hmm. My wife is a pagan. My wife is actually a Wiccan. Mm-hmm. I literally live with a witch.
Mm.
Okay. Now, she's a good witch.
Okay.
Okay. But, you know, blonde hair and, I mean, deer come and eat out of her hand. I literally saw that happen when we lived in Oregon. This deer would come and eat from her hand. I'd stand up and a deal bear and run for the forest. I mean, this is on me. But the point is that I'm not a Christian, but I look at the philosophy, say, of Christ, and I go, if a person lives on those ideals of Christ, they're going to live a decent life, and they're going to treat people well, and they're going to make moral decisions about, like, the technologies we're talking about.
Right.
You know, so I would tend to think, I'm not advocating just that particular religion, but I also wonder, spiritualism in general, human beings are given up on the idea of a spiritual consequences for their actions, even if it's just harming your karma in your next life, whatever it happens to be. If you don't have a morality, then you're going to make immoral decisions.
And there's no relationship between religion and morality.
That's an argument. I mean, I can argue both sides of that. Do you want me to get historian on you? In Boethius' Consolation with Philosophy, which is an ancient work dealing with the consolation of dealing with philosophy and religion, the concept is that human beings have a void within them that can only be filled by God. And if you assume that human beings have something that is a soul that's greater than their mortal existence, then there is a longing in us for that part of us that is transcendent. So then, is religion, is it filled by a benevolent force or a malevolent force? I mean, what is that? Does that aspect in human? That's the argument for addictions. From this point of view, it's the reason why people commit sin. I guess it's from the consolation philosophy idea. And it's a valid idea, though. Human being, if human beings have voids in their life, they will fill it with something to try to get rid of the emptiness. And is that, you know, what is their choice on? Most people can't just fill that void with their life in general. They have to find something beyond the world to fill it with.
Well, it's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, and we have historian Stephen Arms in the studio. More coming up on Strange Harbor.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird. We have Stephen Arms in the studio today. We're just talking about stuff, right? We're just talking stuff. UFOs, Sasquatch, ghosts. Do you believe in ghosts?
I do. I believe human beings have souls, so I do believe that something leaves the body and is transcendent. I mean, again, in the entirety of human history, everyone from Gilgamesh to modern day has talked about the idea of souls and spirits.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have souls and spirits, then logically you could have ghosts. I tend to lean toward, I've never actually seen a ghost, but I do know people who are sensitive and say that they're there. Human beings, we're composed of matter and energy, and that energy especially leaves a residue behind on things. I mean, Kirlian photography is an example of that. We have auras.
Right.
You cut off a person's finger, and the Kirlian aura will still have the finger on it for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
It remembers that there was something there.
Wow.
I wonder if a lot of ghosts are just simply images that have been left, psychic trauma.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in places that have been horrible. I mean, horrible places, mental institutions.
Mm-hmm.
When I drove ambulance, I would pick up, I've been in places that, you know, have that horrible places of despair, and you can feel almost a tangible of the anger and resentment and the horrors that is there. And I wonder if that's what a lot of ghost phenomenon would actually be, rather than, ooh.
Right.
I mean, maybe, you know, somebody wants to hang around if they have unfinished business or whatever. Mm. Maybe they're lost.
Yeah. I believe that...
Maybe they're atheists because they have nowhere to go.
I believe that the spirit has the ability to leave some of its energy behind and still move on. In other words, to be in two places at one time, or maybe even three or four. You know, I believe that the spirit, the soul, is made up of... It's a concentration of the energy of the universe. And it has character, personality, it has all those things.
Well, historically, the concept is what sometimes referred to as an astral body, meaning
right.
a soul. And that you have the soul, you have the mind, and you have the body. And the mind is the interface between the soul and the body. This is, I mean, this is Chinese philosophy, this is, you know, Native American philosophy.
Sure.
Has a lot of the same thing. Do we live in a world that has, you know, that has spirits? Is the world just the physical hunk of matter we have around us? And I go, one, we're perceiving it through all of our senses. And boy, you can get into that. The universe, the world is not what we see and hear the world, but it's not what the world is. Because again, a cricket, what does a cricket see the world as compared to us? I mean, perceptions are all different, and what's reality is somewhat subjective. But if you're talking about the interface of the spirit, again, is there something beyond that connects beyond the divine, something that is transcendent? I would tend to think then you're right. I could agree that that energy could be left behind. Let's call it psychic energy as compared
sure.
to the energy of the soul. And what's the soul made out of? I have no idea. The day someone comes up with a soul meter, it's either going to solve or make every problem in the world 10 times as worse.
In your opinion, is there a supreme being, a god, a whatever?
I have a tendency of having a problem with an omnipotent entity because I don't believe in omnipotence, because of the old, can God make a rock bigger than God could pick up? And if God can, then God's not omnipotent. And if God can't, then God's not omnipotent. Did I go too fast?
My mind is blown.
Okay. Well, the idea of what is, you know, that's, I'll go with the nigh omnipotent. That goes back to the idea, if we are beings that are have something that connects something beyond the world, then there's something beyond the world. For the sake of the argument, I'll use a sci-fi analogy. We live in three dimensions, four if you count time. Okay. What if something lives in five dimensions?
Mm-hmm.
Like Sasquatch.
Possibly. I would tend to think Sasquatch is probably a corporeal entity. If a being is a five-dimensional being and it moves into a three-dimensional world, it only touches it in a small level. It is, for all intents and purposes, infinite from our point of view. It's like the idea of passing a sphere through a plane.
Mm-hmm.
It has infinite number of points as it passes through. It's infinitely large compared to a two-dimensional object.
Right.
So, again, if things are beyond our dimensional understanding, then they would be virtually infinite. So is there a God? Any being that has more than three dimensions is probably infinite.
And what is infinite?
A being with six dimensions would be infinite compared to a being in five dimensions, if those dimensions exist.
Infinity is relative.
Infinity is relative. From our point of view, if a flagpole is 5 miles high or 5,000 miles high, how do we know the difference if we're standing looking up at it? Because we're trying to look for something that's beyond
sure.
our comprehension to understand. They say that, you know, infinite universe. Apparently the universe isn't infinite. But for all intents and purposes for us, it might be.
Mm-hmm.
So if the flagpole is a mile high and the cloud cover covers up the last half mile. Does the last half mile exist?
You know, from a physical point of view, obviously it does. From a perceptual point of view, it doesn't. Again, if you have, you know, it depends on your perceptions. If you can see through the cloud cover, obviously it exists. If you can't, then you're walking around like most people in the world with blinders over their eyes and not actually looking beyond what they beyond the end of their nose.
Right.
Well, hey, man, this is some deep stuff.
It's the problem with, you know, the problem with being a historian. It's sometimes a blessing and a curse. You know, I've read Aristotle and I've read Thucydides. You read all the philosophers. I know my Greek mythology. I know my Norse mythology, my mm-hmm. Egyptian mythology, my Babylonian. You have to.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, all the people have always dealt with the perception of what is our purpose in the world, and do gods exist, and what happens when we die. I mean, every one of them have different interpretations of that, from the gloons of Hades to the cold plains of Niflheim to the nine circles of hell. Of course, that's only Dante.
So what's your opinion on the answers to those questions?
My opinion is the Irish gravestone that says, I am now wiser than the wisest amongst you. Once I die, I'll know.
Right.
As of right now, I would tend to think that if I believe in a soul, then I probably believe there is probably multiple places that souls go to when they die, mm-hmm. depending on the individuals. I would tell you whether it's a happy hunting grounds for more of a Native American level, or whether it's a Valhalla, or whether it's a heaven or a hell. And then an argument that, is there a Jewish heaven and a Muslim heaven and a Christian heaven? That's been an interesting argument. You know?
That's why I choose not to be religious. I'm not an atheist, but I'm not a theist either. So.
No, and like I said, I would consider myself I would be an agnostic. I mean, I've studied too many different religions to have believe that any of them are right.
Mm-hmm.
I think some are better than others. I think anything that leads people toward that, to allows them to embrace that aspect which touches the transcendent, is a good thing,
mm-hmm.
as long as it's not going to hurt and harm others in the process. Oddly enough, artists do the same thing. An artist who is a musician, for example, and you get to that one point where they're playing and it's exactly right and it's perfect and they feel it, they actually touch the transcendent at that moment. Vincent van Gogh paintings, Leonardo da Vinci paintings, do they touch the transcendent? Is that, I look at that and go, it seems beyond what a human being should do to be able to create something so perfect. It has to be something greater than just the sum of our oop oop ack ack monkey people we are.
Right.
If a person, if we looked at a Da Vinci creation and we looked at that 2 weeks after he created it, and then we looked again, you know, 200 years after he created it, would we have a different perception?
I think it depends on the eyes of the people looking at it, because again, if it's, say, if you're looking at Michelangelo's David's a good example, a beautiful, wonderful piece of art. Transcendent. I mean, just the beauty of it is just incredible. But again, a person in his time would have looked at it, the patron who paid for it would have looked at it different, because it was a monetary value to him. People at the time, they didn't believe that David was a story about a little boy who, you know, used a slingshot to take down a giant. They believed that David was actually a character who was real, because the Bible was real, because the Bible is the divinely inspired word of God. So their perception on it's going to be an entirely different. Obviously, if a Muslim looks at it, they're going to have an entirely different perception, because of, they take the have no graven images entirely, which is why you have no statues in Islam. If that statue fell into the Muslim world, it would be destroyed. So, I mean, obviously different perceptions depending on how you're trying to deal with it. My idea of being transcendent, that's why I do have more problems with some religions than others. Proselytizing religions I bump up against, because, again, if you're going to spread it by the sword, then you're not giving me the ability to make the choice myself. You know, and most of them have stopped that. Well, most, not all, have stopped that these days, which is a good thing. So whatever connects people up to an ability to think beyond just their own physicality into the assessment of their own soul, whether it's religion, whether it's meditation, whether it's a study, is a good thing. Because it ultimately will bring you into looking at your nature and the nature of the world around you. I'll pause at that one, because I don't think it's the end of a sentence. And again, I don't like to be hard on religions. People, you know, again, the Christians have the Ten Commandments and the teachings of Jesus. You know, Wiccan, for example, the expression is blessed be, is what they use. And the Wiccan philosophy has in it do as you will as long as you do no harm. So if you don't harm people, you're allowed pretty much to do as you will. And if you don't, but right. by not harm, that includes you also. So a Wiccan would not get into, isn't going to do drug addiction, drug abuse, because who are you harming? Yourself.
Yourself.
Right.
So you're not allowed to harm. If you're not going to do harm, then you're not allowed to harm yourself either in those ways. That's a simple philosophy to live by.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people, I can distill Christianity to doing to others as you'd have them doing to you, and love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and all thy soul. Jesus has said these are the greatest commandments. That's Christianity in a nutshell. If you follow that, you're not going to live a bad life.
Right.
But that's not what a lot of Christian religions teach these days.
So. Well, that's not what a lot of religions that adhere to be Christians say. That's not necessarily... If you are truly a Christian, I mean, the Christian literally means a disciple of Christ.
Right.
If you're a disciple of Christ...
A student of Christ.
A student of Christ.
Right.
If you're a student of Christ, then you have to follow the teachings of Jesus. I have my doubts about it, too. I'm going to get in trouble for blasphemy here. When I read the New Testament, I think Paul was literally the used car salesman of Christianity. He took Jesus' words and wanted to give them to the Gentiles. I always pictured him as a loud tunic going around trying to sell you something you maybe didn't need. Because I read Paul, and I think Paul's a lot of malarkey. Now, I'm going to go to hell for that, I know, but that's okay. Forgive me. But again, if you talk about...
a lot of other good people there.
Yeah, well, you know, Mark Twain said, I don't know if I want to go to heaven or hell because I have so many friends in both places. I would tend to think myself that, you know, that, again, faith is a matter of whatever is making you a better person. I don't necessarily think that if your religion is harming others, then I have serious doubts on whether your religion has any validity. Because, again, why do you need to be a jealous God? Why do you need to defend your God? If your God is a God, then can he defend himself?
Good point.
Go smite somebody, you know, make him, you know.
I think that, you know, my belief is that God or the spirit has no control over you, over human beings. None whatsoever. Zero. God cannot control you. Only you can control you. People have free will and self-determination.
Right.
So the only way that the spirit or God, if you want to call, you know, if you want to go bigger... go for the Big Mac, and can work with you is, number one, if you accept and understand how to communicate with that spirit, and number two, understand that spirit can only give you guidance and influence. It can't do anything for you.
Well, and I would agree with that. On that, that goes back to that void in you concept. Is that spark of divinity within human beings, that part which wants to reach to the transcendent? A lot of people could call it your conscience. Do people actually know when they're doing things that are right and wrong? And a lot of people say, well, anthropologically and culturally speaking, it's all real. No, it isn't. Every culture almost has the same things in common that have lasted. Every culture says, don't murder people. Every culture says, don't steal things. As a fundamental level, if you look at Aboriginal peoples, for example, is a good way to start. If I talk about the Aborigines of Australia, or, you know, or the Khoisan peoples in Africa, or the Mesoamerican peoples, or the Iroquois.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the peoples, you have to have certain rules to run a society. And a lot of those, I simply, they weren't, obviously, they didn't believe God was coming down and going to hit them with a lightning bolt, because their religions don't have that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
They dealt more with the spiritual shamanistic issues that we're talking about here. They looked at being in conjunction with nature. Well, to be in nature, you can't be a glutton. You shouldn't kill maliciously.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't destroy. You shouldn't steal, you know, because you're surviving as a group.
Mm-hmm.
We don't worry about survival. The more people, the less people worry about survival, the higher the tendency for total decadency becomes. And I do believe people can be decadent. I believe decadency is when your vanity and your egotism allows you to do whatever you want. And if a person is doing that and they're having that level of narcissism and that level of virtual sociopath, then I don't think you're listening to that spirit in you more, that calm voice in you that knows when it's right and wrong. You're not touching the divinity. You're filling it up with something. You're filling it up with your own vaingloriousness and just proving that you're a jackass. But that's another matter.
So if you're a vain jackass in life, do you remain a vain jackass as a ghost or a spirit or when you're dead?
Well, that may be why they hang around, because nobody wants them.
No.
You know, I was looking at hearings yesterday and thought, boy, if I were God, I wouldn't take any of these people. that was neither here nor there in Congress.
Right.
Okay. That would be the point of view. I don't know. What is the moral? You're dealing with a fundamental philosophical issues here. Do you remain it? Again, if you believe in reincarnation, then, you know, if now we're into the Hindu faiths and some of the ones that deal in reincarnation, you're going to come back and have to atone for your sins by living a life that's going to balance you in the end to a level where you're reaching a level of spiritual harmony. A lot of, you know, the more Western religions would tend to say you're going to go somewhere and pay penance for what you've done,
mm-hmm.
which is one of the problems I have sometimes with fundamental religions, because I don't believe in infinite punishment for finite sins. If your God has to punish you forever because you've been a thief all your life, your God is a demon.
I'm going to shift gears here before I forget. What about those stories where the young 3 to 5 year old has these memories of being an Air Force pilot and describes all these amazing things, and they didn't have access to know these things, and names people and their superior officers and how they died and their plane going down and emotions that they display when they have these memories of their plane going down and crashing and them dying? And do you have an opinion on that kind of stuff?
I would be skeptical of it.
Yeah.
Right off, because children can be convinced almost anything. The human mind has an incredible ability to store knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
We store virtually everything we ever hear and see in some level or another. So if that child saw enough information and you brought it out in the right method, memory is very subjective. It can be sculpted and changed. You can simply lead people down paths. There have been issues of this with children who claim they were molested, mm-hmm. and you found out the people that were actually talking to them led them into that.
Right.
You hypnotize a person, you're almost always, people think hypnosis, you're going to get the truth. There's a reason hypnosis isn't accepted in court.
Mm-hmm.
I can hypnotize you and convince you of almost anything.
Sure.
Again, that's my argument about it. If it
right.
is actually, I would be very skeptical of that, just because of the fact that logically, if you assume it's true, then you're talking about reincarnation,
mm-hmm.
obviously.
Right.
If you assume that, but I would be very, before I'm going to say, okay, stamp reincarnation
right.
exists, I'm going to say I would really like to look at how it was handled and the reality. It's like, you know, the Russian films of people moving coins with their mind that we know is a lot of BS, because the Russians wanted to prove they had parapsychological individuals.
Right.
You know, I'd like to believe it, but I've never actually seen anybody move anything with their mind other than my wife giving me a dirty glare and me getting up and taking the garbage out.
Okay. It works.
It does work.
Right.
You know, that I am convinced most women who understand being a woman, they know the glare.
Yeah.
And we guys know it when it hits us. Boy,
yep.
I can feel it on the back of my neck sometimes.
Yep.
You're a pretty critical thinker, and you don't jump into anecdotal evidence. You want hard.
I do want hard evidence.
Hard evidence, scientific evidence. If, I know this is a big what if, let's pretend, you
okay.
know.
I have an imagination too.
You're going down, what is it, 105, and a Sasquatch walks right across the street. You see it. It sees you. What do you do next?
Well, I'd probably stop the vehicle and
yeah.
see if I can see it. I would personally get out and look for sign. I would look for tracks. I would look for things that would indicate that it was there. I'm not saying that, like I said, I would be willing to accept that it would be, because logically it could be a person in a costume. I mean, it could be tired eyes.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been Bill walking across the road and the headlights just hit him the
That's
wrong
right.
way. And I
right.
thought, and he looked
That's
like
right.
Sasquatch to
right.
me.
Right.
I've been mistaken for
yeah,
Sasquatch.
Me too.
But let's say you see it. It is, in fact, you know it's not a person in a suit. You know it's not a bear. Do you tell anybody?
I would tell people
because
I would believe it. If I looked at it carefully and concluded what I saw was, mm-hmm. was the reality, as I understand it, I
mm-hmm.
would tell people that I saw this. But I would also look, if it had walked there, there'd have to be trace.
Right.
It would have to have footprints.
Right.
I would have to be able to find something. I'd take the pictures of the footprints to prove it. If it had pooped on the road, I'd get out a bag and
yeah.
you know, got to save it. You know,
take
say
it.
A little, that, you know, I would do it. Again, a lot of people wouldn't, because they would think people would think that they're crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say, well, this is what I saw. And I know that humans are faulty and can be faulty in their perceptions and be fooled,
mm-hmm.
but that's what I saw, and I would report it, and I'd be on the news telling the story.
Okay.
It wouldn't bother me a bit. I would also consent the fact that I could possibly be wrong, though I would, if I'm that sure, I'm 90% sure. I'd almost never get more than 90% sure of anything.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm skeptical, but I'm not pig-headed. Well,
yeah.
My wife might argue with that again.
I'm pig-headed, too.
Well, yeah. I mean,
and your wife would probably agree with that, too.
My wife would definitely agree with that.
That's really probably the case.
I think it's good to have doubt. It's good to have the ability to question everything that you see. I've had experiences, near-death experiences, a number of them, out-of-body experiences. And had I not actually had that experience myself, I would probably say it's BS.
And I can understand that. I can be a skeptic. I can always play devil's advocate because I did this in my classes all the time. I'd argue the opposite of whatever the class is, whether I believed it or not. I could say that the body chemistry, when the brain is in trauma, it releases chemicals that will cause hallucinations in human beings, and your experience could be an hallucination. I don't actually believe that, personally, because I've actually dealt, when I worked as an ambulance driver, I fought death against people. I've done CPR, I've breathed for people, I've resuscitated people. And I've seen that feeling when the person, I've seen people die, and I've seen that light go out of their eyes, and it isn't just the body dying. There's something different about it. And so I tend to think, again, that's anecdotal, and it could just be my perception. But from my perception of the world, human beings are more than just meat. There's something that leaves the body when they die. And therefore, I would agree with you. You said you have an out-of-body experience. I think it's entirely possible. Do I think all people who have those experiences are having out-of-body experiences? There is that part of my skeptic that says there's got to be a percentage of them that it's brain chemistry hallucination factors. Because when the body's dying, endorphins, brain chemistry massively alters.
Right.
You know, oxygen deprivation will cause people. I mean, I've seen people take the wrong medicines and hallucinate about everything in the world. And it tells you how delicately balanced our biochemistry and perceptions are. But do I believe in souls? Yes. Do I believe human beings go somewhere and they die? Yes. Do I have proof of it? No.
Okay.
But you will.
I will someday. When I die, I will have the answer one way or the other. I'm either going to go cool, or the last thing I'm going to go is, oh, damn.
Oops.
This is the end. Sorry.
Yeah.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Strange Harbor.
Are we done already?
Yeah, we're done already.
Wow.
Yeah. Thanks for spending time with us today.
Well, yeah, it's
quite
really
welcome. I had fun. I enjoyed it.
Will you come back? And
oh, sure. I'll be happy to do it again.
Talk more? Okay.
If I can think of anything else to say.
we can keep you going.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Between me and him, we have, I think, a full brain.
More or less.
Hey, we might have a brain and a half between the three of us then.
Well, if you'd like to listen to back episodes or read interesting stories or re-listen to this episode, log on to strangeharbor.net or yell at Bill for his new age TUI.
That's right. I'm open to criticism. I probably won't read it, but I'm open to it.
You want to sign off then?
Well, how about I'll say goodbye and thank you for having me.
Anytime.
Stay strange.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.